From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I'm glad that it's finally fall. So you find something to be glad about. We are also glad that we're being joined right now by phone by Dale Ahlquist. Dale, good day to you.
Bob, God bless you. Do they really have fall in California? I'm curious about that.
Do they really have what?
Fall.
Fall. Oh, fall. Oh, well, I mean, Dale, this is Northern California. It's a little bit of Minnesota.
Is it closer to Minnesota in terms of weather?
Yes. We are about an hour and a half from where they held the 1960 Winter Olympics.
So they have winter in California, too, then?
Yes. The Winter Olympics were held in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Well, you're telling me all kinds of stuff that I don't believe here, Bob. This is great. It's
wonderful. So bring your skis.
Well, I certainly will. I'll bring my rake, too, apparently, huh?
Yeah. Northern California, we have winter. We don't get snow down here in the valley, but we're not very, very far at all from where they get hundreds of inches of snow. So it's Lake Tahoe in that area.
Yeah. Well, in Minnesota right now, I'm looking out the window, just beautiful fall leaves everywhere. It's gorgeous fall day in Minnesota, and yellow and gold and red.
Yeah, you get some tremendous fall color there. My dad went to the University of Minnesota, and he told me about the beautiful fall colors, and also that the 2 week summer was a bit too short. But other than that,
the summer is a little short, spring is a little short, fall really is exactly the wrong. We have these beautiful fall days, and one day when somebody coughs, and all the leaves just fall off the. The trees, because somebody coughs, and then that just blows everything.
Well, it's a great state, that's for sure. And are you a native Minnesotan?
I am indeed. Yes.
And so, how did you get involved with Chesterton?
Yeah, why would a Minnesotan descendant of Swedish immigrants get so involved in Chesterton? Yes. Well, I was raised Baptist. Most Swedish people in Minnesota would have been Lutheran, but this little small strain of Swedish Baptist that I came from.
Wow. Yeah, my mom was from North Dakota, and I think it was state law that you had to be Lutheran.
it was, I think, a law here for many years. But the Baptists were an exception to everything else here. Especially Swedish Baptists. There are a few German Baptists, which makes a little more sense. Because I was a Baptist, I was a very strong evangelical, and being an evangelical, I was a big C.S. Lewis fan, and reading C.S. Lewis is a natural way to discover G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah, I was back in the day when nobody thought anything of C.S. Lewis being taught in the public schools. I'm not sure. I don't know, but I'm not sure that would happen today.
It's hard to say. I mean, the Chronicles of Narnia might make it in there, but then again, it might
probably not screw tape letters.
Probably not.
But that's where I learned about it. Was in junior high school in public schools, and nobody thought anything about it.
Well, because it's a brilliant piece of writing. It's allegorical. It has great wit. And it's talking about the great themes that you read in literature, because the great themes in literature happen to be religious themes.
They sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even The Wizard of Oz has a little bit of religion in it.
Any great piece of literature does. It's always, as Chesterton says, there's only one subject. You're talking about God. You're talking about either rebelling against God or seeking God.
Absolutely. So, first off, let's really set the table here. You are coming out to Northern California.
I'm coming out to see what fall looks like in Sacramento. That's why I'm coming out.
Yes. Well, I figured you were on a fact-finding mission for sure.
Yes.
Today it's cloudy. It's high clouds. It hasn't rained. It's supposed to rain, but it hasn't. Rain is something we were told that California used to get in the 30s and 40s and 50s, but it has not rained for a while. But
wow.
Cloudy, about 60 degrees for a high temperature, about 45 for a low temperature. So, yeah, it's a little bit chilly.
That's fall weather.
That's exactly fall weather. Yeah.
Wow. No.
So and we have certain varieties of trees that we get some color. We don't get the color like they get in Minnesota or New Hampshire or those places.
Sure. So I'm coming out to see the fall. And, Bob, tell me why else I'm coming out there.
You are coming to the great city of Dixon, which is about 25 miles from Sacramento, towards San Francisco. It's west of Sacramento. A great parish there, St. Peter's. But you are coming to the 2021 gala for the Valley of the Sacred Heart Academy, which is a Chesterton Academy, their high school is, started right there in this small farm town of Dixon.
So there's a Chesterton Academy in Dixon, California. Now,
it is hard to believe.
What are the chances of that?
I grew up about 10 miles from Dixon in Davis,
okay.
And if you had told me that there would ever be a Chesterton. Well, first I would have said, huh? A what? What is that? Is that a kind of tractor, a Chesterton? You know? So, now, in Dixon, you'll feel a lot like you're in rural Minnesota. I mean, it's a farm town, you know? And, I mean, they still sell tractors on the main drag.
Well, the only reason I believe you, Bob, is because I actually have been there before.
Yeah.
The great folks who started that school invited me out there a couple of other times, and it's amazing. The school is just doing really well.
It's thriving.
I'm really pleased to be invited back to give a talk there again.
Yeah, I think when you start something that pleases the Lord, it's going to thrive.
Amen to that. Amen.
Yeah. So, tell us first off, you know how you got involved with Chesterton, and then let's talk about the Chesterton Academy and et cetera.
I mean, I told you how it was C.S. Lewis who led me to reading Chesterton.
Mm-hmm.
And Chesterton really put me on a new track altogether because it was 16 years of kicking and screaming, but Chesterton brought me to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And so truly the most profound influence on my life was reading G.K. Chesterton.
Wow.
Changed my life. Completely. He's a life-changing writer. But it wasn't just that, you know, he brought me to the Catholic Church, which is huge, but he gave me this inspiration that other people need to discover G.K. Chesterton. Here was this great writer of the early 20th century who was completely forgotten, certainly neglected in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little upset that I had, never have been taught Chesterton in a good school, and here he was languishing. And so my an immediate goal was to start the American Chesterton Society, to start pushing a revival of G.K. Chesterton, because not only had he had a great effect on my life, I just thought he's a giant of English literature and English thought. And Western thought, he was a great mind that not only unjustly neglected, but exactly the cure for what ails us, because all of the nonsense theories that are so exalted in the academy, they all have an answer to them, because Chesterton answers all of them. He anticipated them, he addressed them directly, and he's the one we never hear from. And, you know, common sense, that's what I gave him the title, the Apostle of Common Sense. It led to a series on EWTN, a great privilege to put on a television series on G.K. Chesterton, and many, many good things happened from helping lead the revival of interest in this great Catholic writer.
So many of us say, you know, we think of Chesterton and we think of some pithy quote, you know, and we think of him almost sometimes as a humorist, like a Mark Twain or something, but that doesn't even touch who he was.
Right, and the thing about great humor is that the reason it's great is because it reveals a truth to it.
Right.
you know, it makes us laugh, but we laugh because it's something that's true.
Yeah, you're not just telling a joke.
Yeah, you're not just telling a joke. You're telling a witticism that makes you laugh at a truth that not only reveals our foibles, but also reveals something obvious that's so obvious that it's painful, right?
Right.
What Chesterton says, the Bible tells us to love our neighbors and to love our enemies, generally because of the same person. You know, that's funny, but it points to a gigantic truth. And that's why we laugh, because, oh, yeah, well, that's why that's funny.
Yeah, no, I we can all relate to that.
Yeah, we can all relate to that. And so that's the sort of thing, all those great one-liners that just give you a sense of joy, but that you know you're being informed, you know you're being elevated with each of those truisms that he gives you.
So how did he convert you? I mean, he's not standing there with a big stick and beating you over the head with it.
No, not at all. It's Chesterton describes, Bob, the three stages of conversion. You know, the first stage is you decide you're going to be fair to the Catholic Church.
Interesting.
And, you know, because he says either you're for the church or you're against it. And as soon as you stop being against it, well, then you start being for it. No one's neutral about the Catholic Church.
No. I've never run into somebody, especially when I tell them that I do a radio show for the Catholic Church, I've never run into anybody who's, what's that? You know, I have no opinion about that.
Yeah, I have no opinion about that. No one would say that. Good for you. Like, get away from me, right? Yeah, so...
I'm getting off this bus.
And so, that's the first stage. When you decide you're just not going to listen to the criticisms, you're going to start evaluating. So take it, you know, for what it's worth, be fair, as it were. See what the church has to say. And then comes the second stage, which is discovering the Catholic Church, just learning what it is that the church teaches. And that's the fun part. When you just learn all these things you never knew before. Because it's like being in a foreign country with all these exotic animals and butterflies and flowers that you've never seen or heard of, and you're just taking it all in. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating trip, but there's no commitment which makes it fun. You know, you can turn around and leave anytime you want. But then comes the third stage, running away from the Catholic Church. Trying to get out of what's happening to you. Your mind is suddenly convinced, your brain has been satisfied with all the right answers, but your heart, your will is saying, you need to turn around and get out of here. This is going to change your life. Stop. Find a way to escape. And, it ends with an act of humility as you enter the church with your head bowed. You discover that the inside of the church is larger than the outside. That's a great discovery of becoming Catholic. And so what happened with me reading Chesterton and why he brought me to this is I started to embrace his thinking. I started to see he was right about everything. Everything he addressed, he gave me a perspective that showed me, this is the right way to think. But it also confirmed what I believed already, because it was just common sense. And I sort of always felt that way, too, but he just expressed it for me perfectly. And then you suddenly realize you're not thinking like a Protestant anymore. You're starting to think in terms of the historical church. And then you realize that you're really starting to be in trouble. And that's what happens. Chesterton has convinced you without even trying, because he wasn't proselytizing. He was just explaining the right view of the world. And drawing you in with his love and his wit and his joy and his goodness, which is what saints do. Saints, you draw into this goodness of the saints.
So,
and then finally you know, oh man, I'm in trouble. I got to get out of this and become Catholic.
Exactly. So you're raised Baptist. You believe in God. You believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Why couldn't you read Chesterton and remain Baptist?
Well, there are people who do. That's the thing about Chesterton is he has this great appeal to non-Catholics because of his very universal truth. And the problem is when you keep going down that road, a one day, I've got to go all the way to the church. I have to follow him all the way into the Catholic Church. He himself was a convert.
Mm-hmm. And what did he convert from?
Well, he was an Anglican. He first moved from being a non-believer altogether to becoming a member of the Church of England.
Mm-hmm.
And then he called that his incomplete conversion. And then he followed the path all the way to the Catholic Church.
Wow. So I remember years ago having the great joy of interviewing Cardinal Avery Dulles.
Oh, what a pleasure.
And I'm talking to him, and he says, well, I'm a convert, of course. You know, he's from the Dulles family, and, you know, the famed, I think, the Eisenhower administration, I believe.
Yeah, right.
And he says, it wasn't very popular in my family. I said, well, were you, you know, riding a donkey and you struck by lightning or what? And he says, no, I just started reading when I was in college. He didn't mention Chesterton, but he said, I just started reading when I was in college. And the more I read, the more I realized that this was the church Jesus founded, you know, and it was inescapable. You know, going back in history, as you say, it's dangerous. And next thing you know, he's Cardinal Avery Dulles.
Yeah, he's a cardinal, yeah. What an amazing story. Well, I don't know that Chesterton played a role in his conversion, but he definitely was a Chesterton fan. In one of his last books, he does talk, his last book is about defending the faith and about apologetics. And he mentions Chesterton.
Oh, wow.
He even mentioned me in his last book, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, in Chesterton's writing, like, if you were going to recommend something to somebody that maybe is thinking about becoming Catholic, what would you recommend?
Well, I mean, if someone hasn't read Chesterton at all, I recommend one of the introductory books that I've written, which is designed to introduce people to Chesterton.
Mm-hmm.
And either The Apostle of Common Sense or Common Sense 101 Lessons from G.K. Chesterton. Those are great introductory books to Chesterton. And they're also very, very welcoming doors to exploring the Catholic faith as well.
Mm-hmm. So, the Chesterton Academy, talk about that.
Yeah. Well, how's that? What's the connection there?
Yeah.
So, it was 14 years ago, Bob, when I was needing to send one of my children to high school. I had two that had already attended high school, but we were in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota, with a fellow parishioner. We just were not happy with any of the choices that we had for Catholic high schools, and we just kept talking about it, and finally we said, well, let's just start our own high school.
Hmm.
Crazy idea.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
And I also knew that it had to be, we knew it was going to be Catholic, but I said, let's focus on a classical education and not follow the whole modern trend of education. Let's study the classics. Let's make complete thinkers out of our students. You know, and I said, the model thinker really is G.K. Chesterton. And, you know, I had already established the Chesterton Society. So because of that, I was able to give the school a national profile when we, you know, started the first school. And by calling the Chesterton Academy and you're teaching Chesterton's philosophy in the school, which is the sense of wonder at the universe and this philosophy of joy and thanksgiving, but also how to be a complete thinker, how to realize, as we said at the very beginning, there's really only one subject. It's God. You know, the incarnation is the center of everything that you study, whether it's history or science or literature. If it's always pointing to the central truth of creation, that God has entered history, he has become a man, and he has died and has risen again. That is the truth that is relevant to all other truths. And the only reason we study is so we can really become closer to God and help other people become closer to God. And so that was the foundation of the school. And with the classical learning, we studied Latin, we studied philosophy. Most schools don't study Latin, and most schools in high school never study philosophy. We emphasize the arts as much as we emphasize the sciences and math. So, you know, they're going to study geometry and pre-calculus, but and physics and chemistry and biology, but they're also going to study how to draw and paint and how to sing and how to act on stage, because the arts are really the incarnational activity of man.
Oh, man, I'd be afraid my parents are going to send me to that school and I'm going to get all Fs.
No, you're gonna realize how much joy there is in studying when you get our curriculum. That's what it is. It's about joy.
Yeah, I have a daughter who's a junior in college, and she's just tripped into being a design major, and is just soaring, you know, and. And I said, if I drew a farmer and a tomato, I would have to label both of them.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing, Bob. This is what amazes people. A lot of kids come into our school not quite able to draw a stick figure. You
uh-huh.
know,
yeah.
Possibly by working on it, draw a stick figure. And every single one of them, 4 years later, is copying an oil masterpiece.
Wow.
Because it's a skill that you can learn. It's just a simple
really?
Skill that if you study it and do the exercises, yeah, everybody can learn how to draw and paint.
Can I still enroll? Can I still enroll?
You can enroll, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, call Chris Simpson out there.
I will. I'll call her. She's
up.
Nearby.
Yeah, you can be one of the older students. That's fine. Yeah.
All right. Maybe I can be on the basketball team.
Yeah.
Wow. So you started this high school. Who did you attract to begin? How did you go out and, I don't like the word sell, but how did you go sell
it? Yeah, no, it was a crazy idea. There weren't too many people that were happy about us starting a new high school, and especially something as crazy as what we were proposing. And we found ourselves with a lot of opposition at the beginning, and we only got 10 students the first year, and they were a combination of a few parish school students, a few Catholic homeschool students, and, you know, a couple of public school students where the parents said, yeah, I don't want my kids in a public school anymore. And this sundry group got together, and they were the first class, and we just kept growing. And, the thing is that as the school kept growing, other people started finding out about what we were doing. And they came to us and they said, we want to do the same thing you're doing. And how do you do it? And we're saying, well, we're still not sure how we did it, but here's what we did. And eventually we sort of just got down to boxing up the curriculum and explaining the templates of how to run a school. And, about 7 or 8 years ago is when the second Chesterton Academy opened. And now there are 35 Chesterton Academies around the country, including our friends out in Dixon.
Wow. Is that the first in California?
That was the first in California, but I can tell you there's interest in the Sacramento area from at least three different locations within a 30-mile radius of Sacramento of getting new Chesterton Academies in the Sacramento area. So I think we're going to see more being opened in the next few years.
So what's the critical mass to opening a school?
Well, we did it with 10 students. They generally open with more than that, but they start growing. We start with just the ninth grade curriculum, and we start building each year. And, those that follow the model pretty much have the same experience. They start with between 15 or 20 students, and, you know, they soon have 40, then 60, then 80.
And is it, I mean, you have a physical plant usually?
Well, generally, the thing about opening a school is that there's a lot of space out there that you can use, that especially classroom space, because of the way demographics work, people have stopped having babies, so there's a lot of classroom space available. So it's not hard at all to get classroom space without having to build. There's empty church schools and empty public schools that are available to be used.
Hmm. Wow. So why are you coming out to Dixon? Just to celebrate?
It certainly is. The Dixon folks have been growing steadily since they opened a few years ago.
Yeah.
And this is a gala that they're truly a celebration. to show off the school and to get people involved to support the school. And I'm very happy to go out there and talk about the state of education today and why these Cheshire schools have been so successful around the country.
And it's this Saturday, the 23rd, 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. So they're going to get it all in during daylight at Araceli Farm, which is just outside of Dixon, a beautiful spot. They raise all kinds of beautiful things, and it's a great venue besides being a farm. So, and it says heavy hors d'oeuvres. I think that means they have to weigh at least a pound.
Yeah, I think heavy hors d'oeuvres means minimum 1 pound. I think that sounds just great. I hear that is it true that in California they make wine? Is that true?
Once in a while they do. Like I said, I'm from Davis, which is the home of the University of California at Davis. And the Department of Viticulture and Enology, it probably has trained virtually every winemaker in the world. It's just, you know, especially those in the Napa Valley, which is...
So there could be wine at this event.
There may well be, but it'd just be wine tasting. You know, you swirl it around
tasting.
And spit it out. Yeah. You don't get to swallow it.
Okay, that's fine. I can taste wine,
you are just going to be right in the heart. It's amazing how many different, I forget, what do they call them, appellations or something, where, you know, this is the Napa. First time I heard that word, I thought they were talking about the Appalachian Mountains. You know, and I'm like, wait a minute, do they have wine there too? You know, and so we have it in the foothills. We have it down the Central Valley. We have it in Napa, of course. And now if you're within 100 miles of Napa, you try to convince people you're in the Napa Valley if you're a winemaker.
Right. You know? So, now, that is, of course, a legendary word around the rest of the country, but I know that there's all these wonderful valleys out there. Well, I'm really looking forward to coming, but, you know, in addition to your listeners coming, Bob, you should come. Why don't you come so I can meet you face-to-face? That'd be fantastic.
I would love to be there. I have another engagement on that day, which will take me south, so I won't be in town, but the next time I will definitely be there.
Next time. That sounds great.
Yeah. Because I'm going to enroll.
Yes, right. You're going to be a student there. You have to come.
I need to learn how to draw to keep up with my daughter.
Perfect.
Well, Dale, it's awfully good to talk with you. And people can go to valleyofthesacredheart.com to get your tickets. It's this Saturday, the 23rd, 3:30 to 6:30 at Araceli Farms. That's on Pitt School Road in the great city of Dixon in Solano County. Dale, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for all you do. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
My pleasure, too, Bob, and God bless you.
God bless you, too, and safe travels out here.
Thank you.
Hey, take care. That's Dale Alquist, who is the founder of the Chesterton Society and the Chesterton Academies, and there is now a Chesterton Academy at the Valley of the Sacred Heart in the great city of Dixon. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Laura Lynn. Thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We go now to the great city of Elk Grove, and we're joined by Marcy Green, who is the principal of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School there in Elk Grove. Marcy, good day to you.
Good day to you. It's good nice to talk to you.
Good to hear your voice. One of these days, we might be lucky and get to see you in person, but for now... Yeah,
I was really looking forward to seeing you at
the Red Mass.
Yeah. But oh my goodness, my brain just turned off.
The Bishop Gallegos dinner.
Yes, exactly. And our daughter had had a baby that weekend. And
oh, so, priorities!
Thank goodness for us.
Congratulations.
I look forward to seeing you there every year, so yes.
Yeah, it's a great event, and it was in Elk Grove this year.
I know it was. I know it would have been very convenient, but we were doing grandparent duty, so that's a blessing for us.
That's the best excuse in the world that you could have. So congratulations.
Thank you.
That's exciting. That's wonderful. A boy or a girl?
This one, a girl.
Wow.
This is number 4, so.
September 4th.
Yes.
That's wonderful. That is really wonderful. Well, is she enrolled yet in school?
No, but her sister is enrolled and started preschool yesterday. So
wow.
That was a super blessing for us. So,
she's what, 3?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, wow. It's exciting.
A lot of great things.
My
happening.
Mom always had a little poster on the wall that said, grandchildren are God's gift for getting old. But we're not getting old.
No, not at all. I'm glad I'm young and can enjoy them.
I know. So my mom had it wrong. But, you know, I remember my mom with my kids when they were little, and just like, unbelievable. It was like such a new joy in her life. You know, she had been widowed, and it was just this new joy, and that she carried with her till the day she died, you know. And the other thing about a grandma is, man, did my kids listen to her? Woo. You know,
well, what a special relationship for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we didn't have you on to talk about grandparenting, but
no, sorry.
But that's wonderful. That's just wonderful. So you guys are back in school. You've been back in school for a long time.
We have. We're almost through the first trimester, if you can believe that.
Wow. That's right. It starts mid-August, and here we are past mid-October. So, yeah.
Last day of the trimester is the 4th of November, so it'll be here before we know it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So how have things been, you know, dealing with everybody, with dealing with the county, dealing with the state, dealing with the CDC and the FDA and just schools here in the diocese?
Well, I think, thankfully, the fact that we were, for all intents and purposes, open last year,
mm-hmm.
we really were able to understand what the guidelines were, what the protocols were, and got really good at them. I think the challenge this year has been the sense that we're getting back to normal when really we still have these protocols to follow. So being able to take the guidelines and live within them, but to continue to create experiences not only for our kids, but for our families, and mm-hmm. do it in a safe way. And let me tell you, our families have been so grateful and so graceful in just understanding why we have to do things differently.
Right.
And
right.
But I can say that it takes a lot of time to make it work. And mm-hmm. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
Well, and you have to have just 100% buy-in from people. You know, people really have to participate, and understand why you have to do things a certain way, and really buy in and sell it to their kids. And I mean, the record of Catholic schools in this area last year was just remarkable. I mean, it became almost a model for the reopening of the public schools.
It continues to be remarkable. I mean, you see the joy that the kids come to school with every day. I think there's this newfound understanding of why the social aspect of school is so important. The progress that our kids have made is to be so proud of. I think, you know, they haven't missed a beat. As we were talking about today in our staff meeting, you know, if we have to take that time to continue to support their emotional well-being, so be it. They're not missing out on other things because we have to attend to that right now. So
what is different, say, this year from 5 years ago?
Oh my goodness. Different this year than 5 years ago. I would say that's such a great question. I would say what we're in the process of doing right now is trying to ensure that we are going back to what we did 5 years ago, but being mindful that it's something important. Mm-hmm. This is a really reflective time right now. I think everything that we do, because we can't do everything, we're trying to make the most of what we are doing. It's really hard to draw that parallel. I would say the number one thing that's the same is that we are a Catholic school, and the most important thing that we're doing for our children is fulfilling our mission and teaching them the importance of God. And I think right now, I should say, I think that's easier because I think people are recognizing the importance of the spiritual aspect and what that brings to our kids, where, you know, we got so hyper-focused before, the academics were all important, and I think that whole package is being seen as, at least I believe, being seen as the necessity of Catholic schools, that first and foremost is that relationship with God, what we're doing with the kids in that aspect. And I don't think we can emphasize that enough. That was when I started out the school year, back to school night with the parents. There was just this common understanding that that's why we're all here together. That the other pieces will fall into place if we've got God in our lives. So
yeah, I think
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I mean I hear a variety of reasons why people send their kids to Catholic schools. And obviously the great academics is one. The fact that it has a feeling like a family of people watching out for each other. If a kid's having trouble in school, you're going to get a phone call and let's talk about this and let's help them get over whatever the problem is. But bottom line for most people is that religious element. There's no way around it.
Right, and you know, and honestly, what I've seen over the last 2 years is just a real decline in the behaviors of the kids at school. And I know there's so many factors that go into that. You know, we've been very diligent about our virtues teaching. But I just think that because the kids have this newfound understanding and appreciation for being at school, the behavior issues are not there. It's different.
Yeah.
The issues that we're having are more, these emotional issues, and that's when you really get the buy-in from the parents,
right?
Because we're all trying to figure it out together. So, well, yeah, you know, it really does emphasize that community and that partnership between school and home.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've had within the last year, four teenagers at home. Two of them have now gone off to college, but three, but one of them is living at home. And just seeing the differences between them as to how they responded to what was going on, you know, whether it was how often they got to see their friends, which ones were more social, which ones were less social, which ones were athletes and couldn't participate, you know, which ones did well with virtual learning and which ones it just was a disaster just within one family, you know, and I can't imagine with a, you know, you're looking at 370 kids or whatever the number is there, that's wow, you're going to see a lot of different behaviors.
Well, and also the age range, you know,
exactly,
you're talking about from 3 years old all the way up to 14 years old and the set of things that they bring with them. But but yeah, I mean, to go back to your point about the family, isn't it a beautiful thing to see how different, even in one family, all of our children or all of us can be, because that's what,
yeah,
you know, we need to celebrate those differences, and I think that's something that we need to especially think about right now.
I've said that to my wife a million times, that the one of the greatest joys I have of being a dad is seeing how different all these kids are and how maybe we've had some influence on them, but they're their own people, you know, and they're able to pursue their own thing without this great sibling rivalries you hear about and things like that, or they're trying to clone their parents, you know.
And I think it's beautiful that they all have their own definition of success.
Right.
You know, I think society has this definition of success, but when you allow your children to be who they need to be, they really come into their own, and that joy in them figuring out who God wants them to be.
Well, the way God set things up, no child is a clone of their parent. You know, you've got two parents, and you're mixing all those genes, and now you have a unique human being.
Right, and I say thank goodness that my kids are not a clone of me.
Yeah, I know. I always say, you know, I tell the kids, you know, we're made in the image and likeness of God. And I say, except when I look in the mirror in the morning, I'm not sure I believe that. I hope God doesn't look like that. Yeah. But so the diocese started, the Catholic Schools of the Diocese of Sacramento started a virtual academy to maybe take a little pressure off. You had teachers, you know, doing both, you know, in the same classroom, you know, in person,
yes,
and double duty. And I remember you telling me, and it really stuck with me, that the reason they did it and didn't complain, even though it was really double duty, was their sense of mission. You know,
and that has not stopped.
Yeah. So how has the academy affected that? Now we have a place where, a virtual place for kids to be.
For us, it really hasn't affected
us. Changed.
I can say we have one student who was registered for kindergarten, who actually took some time. Parents were paying for both because they weren't sure where they wanted him to end up. And they've said, you know, just because of their family dynamics, there's an illness in their home, and they want to make sure that that the grandparent stays healthy.
Right.
That they decided to do online because they could until January, and they asked us to leave the spot open. So other than that, we haven't had anyone go, because I think even the people who the kids who stayed home last year, you know, we made a very concerted effort to talk to them and say, this is what things look like. Come and see it. Give it a try. And just really, I hope, gave them that confidence. And once, like I said last year, once the kids are on campus and they see and they feel that comfort level, they're fine.
Yeah,
and so the same thing happened with the kids you know, coming back that hadn't been here.
Right.
And we're doing everything we can to continue to stay safe, but also still trying to provide an environment for them that's nurturing. We don't want to lose sight of the fact that, you know, we're developing the whole child, and we need to have that not only intellectual growth, but also that personal growth and interpersonal growth, and all of those things still need to happen, and, you know, sharing and understanding each other and having conversations and working together, all those things are so important.
Yeah, ultimately they're just hugely important. They are as important as reading, writing, arithmetic. They just are
more important. I mean, that's what you take with you, you know, into life and how you interact with other people.
Yep.
I think I'm nervous. I'll kind of jump into something else, but I'm nervous about the how much that online screen interaction where you're not looking someone in the eye, we miss out on so much, and there's so much that is misinterpreted that we need to, you know, sit around a table. We need to look at each other. We need to talk to each other. We need to understand someone else's perspective. Those are all things that we can't lose sight of in all of this.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's just amazing how like I said, even in our own family, we could see the difference. I was one of those kids that was so shy in school. I probably would have said, "Oh, we get to stay home, really? I don't have to be nervous about somebody looking at me or somebody." You know, it's just. But you know, the thing that I find amazing in our badly divided world, where people can't even agree on what day of the week it is, it seems, is that virtually everybody agrees that the best thing for the child is in person. All sides seem to agree on that.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. I mean, I know that there's still people that are fearful. I know that there's people that will, you know, cave to the whims of their kids that are shy and, you know, want to be withdrawn. But, you know, and my hat's off to families who will homeschool their kids. But we had some last year that were homeschooling their kids and came back. They just said, you know, this is where our kids need to be.
Yep. Yeah, and it's I certainly respect the people. I mean, there was a lot of fear out there, and good reason. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what we were dealing with, but even through that, I mean, my wife and I, we couldn't wait till the kids could go back to school, because we knew how much that socialization, for want of a better word, was how important that was to their future.
Mm-hmm. That's part of their growth. You know, growing up is going off to college and fending for yourself and all of that that's needed. And, you know, that's the beautiful part, is you let them go and then see what they become. And, you know, they come back.
And they come back. Yeah, they do. Yes, indeed they do. So what are your biggest challenges now?
A couple things probably. I think, time right now, there's just a lot of being pulled in, and the teachers too. Janet Nagel, who I very much appreciate. She's my new regional director, and you know, she was a principal for 31 years, and she said, "Wow, this is the hardest school year she'd ever seen start, because just a lot of." Protocol in itself, you know, there's a lot of reporting that needs to go out. There's the, you know, tracking the kids. And now, you know, all of a sudden we have this many more kids on campus, which is beautiful. But when they're sick, tracking to make sure that, you know, that there's, you know, how their siblings are doing. So the office has a lot going on. We're still starting our events back up, but still kind of in this mode where we're not really sure who can volunteer, especially in the classroom, because, you know, if they're not vaccinated, there's still a fearful nature about that, and trying to make everyone feel really comfortable in their own choices. And I think piggybacking on that is the unknown of what, you know, the vaccine mandate might bring, and the fear in people. So there's still a fear because there's still things that are unknown. So I think the biggest challenge is the unknown, which is life in general, but I just think that it's heightened by what's still kind of going on with that, with COVID.
Every time we think it's in the rearview mirror, it jumps up in front of your car. You know, it's like,
I mean, you want the kids to be involved. You know, we're getting ready to start basketball season, and we're allowing the older kids to play because they've been out playing sports.
Sure.
But not the young. We're putting it off a little longer for the younger kids, which is fine. They know it's coming. Thank goodness. You know, those are the kind of the little things that the norm is not quite back to norm yet. And in order to make it normal, there's a lot of things that have to be put in place. And so helping people to understand why we're still not quite there yet. And like I said, the parents are wonderful about it, but it still takes a lot of communication and a lot of, you know, making sure your ducks are all in a row.
Yeah, there's just so many protocols. Do you do a lot of testing, or would you have requirements for testing? How do you handle the whole COVID situation?
So if kids are out sick, you know, there's three things. They can either they can either stay out sick for 10 days. They can test. I'm trying to line that up in my head right now. It's more about the communication. What are the specific facts around what's going on in your family? You know, if parents have COVID, what does that mean to the kids? If it's brought into the home, so we have a lot of protocol in place to help us to make those decisions, and we're a lot better at it because, you know, it happens. But as far as testing, for the most part, parents are I would say, over-testing, and that's not a bad thing, because they want to ensure that their kids are not coming to school sick. And it isn't even a question. We, at our school, and this is public knowledge because I reported out to the parents, we've had only two cases of kids that have come to school sick. Or come to school with COVID or had COVID, and it hasn't spread.
Boy, that's remarkable.
Yeah. I think a lot of that is, you know, the hygiene in the classroom, but I think more than that, it's the awareness that your child is sick in some way, and they're just keeping them home. And I think this is the case, that we're not keeping out anybody that doesn't need to be, that should be here.
Right.
So for instance, you know, when we have a modified quarantine, if a child in the class is sick, we know that we can test the kids around them. We know what the testing procedures look like, and keep them at school so that in turn, if those kids got sick or any other kids got sick, they would stay home because they're not staying home unnecessarily, I guess,
is
the point that I'm making. So everybody's being cautious and smart and using really good judgment, and I just keep saying we trust, and we did that last year, we're doing that this year. And so not only are we trusting in the parents and trusting in each other, but we're trusting in God, and I have to believe that we know that we're doing the right thing by having kids at school, and that confidence builds. And I think going through this cold season is difficult. I'm nasally from allergies.
Yep.
I walked out this morning to walk the dog and I sneezed 12 times. And, you know, and I know that's what that is. But, you know, could I come to school and take a quick test just to make sure that, you know, it's nothing else? Yeah, and that's what we're doing.
Do you have the tests right at school?
We do have them at school. They're not necessarily for the kids. The parents have been really good about doing that at home. We have them for the teachers and the staff because we want to ensure they can come. You know, someone in their house is sick and they say, you know, I'm really nervous about that. I feel fine. Hey, come in, take a 15-minute test, and then we'll put you in the classroom. And that's what we're doing. And I think that's really, there's a confidence in the test. They seem to be working, you know, as much as they can to keep, you know, to keep the illness out of school, or at least the COVID illness out of school. So.
Yeah, I mean, in if you have allergies, the Sacramento Valley in the fall and the spring, it's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just brutal, and yeah, we've had the occasional kid that, you know, wakes up with the sniffles or sneezing, and yeah, right away, just go test them, and we've been lucky that the tests have all been negative so far. So.
Well, and thankfully, parents are, I think, starting to kind of stock them up at home and have them available. And, you know, we had one case of where we had a student that was modified quarantine because they were sitting next to a student who had it, and she was supposed to read at Mass. And I said, you know what, Mom, we didn't find out till the night before, so I don't want her to miss her opportunity to lecture at Mass. And so have her come in. We've got tests here. You can give you a place to do it. And she did. She was negative, and we went on with the school day.
That's
that was
wonderful.
An exception to it being staff, but having them on hand really helps. So,
well, Marcy,
and we've got parents who are pharmacists who donate them, so that's a beautiful thing too.
Yeah, well, it's great. I don't generally spend this long in the principal's office, but
sorry.
I hope I'm not in trouble.
No, I try to tell the kids it actually is a good place, even if for some reason they're struggling with something. You know, it's a good time
to
talk to somebody. Yeah, it's not meant to be a punitive place.
No,
it's meant to be a place to solve problems or, you know, to come and socialize. And I think they're understanding that more and more. So
that's wonderful. Well, it has a lot to do with you for sure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for taking the time to be with us. Thanks for all you do. You're doing the Lord's work out there in Elk Grove. And I know that those kids are just blessed to have you and your great staff there. So
I feel blessed to be able to do it, and I know they do as well.
Well, I hope our paths cross again soon. And
me too. I do listen to you on the radio.
Well, that's good. That's good. Thank you.
And not only your show, but I happen to catch you on Gus Lloyd's show every once in a while. So
Gus, yeah, that's a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Have
Marcy.
A wonderful day.
Hey, you too.
Okay.
That's Marcy Green, who's the principal at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School in Elk Grove. That'll do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose.
I feel burning deep inside of me. I feel your spirit is moving.